I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go into the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Another painful Sunday in the books as the Seahawks had and suffered defeat like they haven't for many, many a year. At home, more intently, but we are back to dissect and discuss everything that happened on Sunday and everything that's come out of that game and that defeat and what it means for not only the 2017 season, but moving forward in the next few years. To do that, myself, Stuart Court, on the Pedestrian Podcast this week, is joined, as ever, by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm not too bad. It's been obviously a pretty tumultuous week thus far in Seahawk world, and I imagine as game week gets ever closer and more players start talking, it will only get a bit more and more crazy, as today has seen with Earl Thomas and Bobby Wagner. But I'm not too bad. Can't complain.
Yeah, cool. So Sunday was not for the faint of heart as the Seahawks followed up what probably was a fortunate just to be 6-point defeat on the road in Jacksonville. The wheels completely and utterly fell off the wagon quite early on Sunday as they went to a 42-7 loss at home to NFC West rivals, the Los Angeles Rams. To hear what just thought that sounded like, here is Steve Rabel, and that's what Steve Rabel sounded like with the highlights of the game, because there weren't any, Adam.
Yeah, I was going to say that was going to be a little quick segment. it was just, well, at 13-0 when they scored the first touchdown, I thought, right, this is going to be like the NFC Championship game, and we're going to come back like against Green Bay, and we're going to win. When the next touchdown scored and it was 20-0, I was like, this could be 100. Because it didn't look like we could stop them. It didn't look like we could gain any yards on them. And the way that their special team was dominating, it looked like they were only going to have 25 yards to go every time they got near. They got the ball in hands because their field position was so incredible. I mean, Jared Goff barely threw the ball in anger in the first half. I think he had one touchdown to Robert Woods, but I think he had like 75 yards in the first half, and his team was 34-0 up. It was unheard of. Just the level of the beatdown was depressing in a way, but actually, you know, I found it almost liberating in another way. Yeah. Just that I finally just could just give up on this year and just sort of watch the rest of the games with a little bit of peace.
Yeah, it was the stressless game I can remember in recent years for Seahawks. There was no angst. There was no threat of a comeback. There was no comeback. As I said, when Gurley scored the first of his 17 touchdowns on Sunday, it was 13-0. It felt like the Falcons game. It felt like, right, we've stopped them twice. They finally broke us slightly. Obviously, it's only 1 yard rush. This is when it happens. And after the Michael Wilhoit interception, I said, that's, although we lost like 15 yards on the actual interception, it was good because we stopped them scoring. And that was the moment. That was another moment. And then 3rd and 20, Todd Gurley runs for 60-yard touchdown, pretty much untouched. You're like, okay.
I actually burst out laughing when that happened. So I just, yeah. Did that make it 27? Nothing.
34.
It was just at the point where it was like, this is absurd. And if you don't laugh, you'll top yourself. So you might as well sort of, you know, get the black comedy out of it, because it was quite funny.
Yeah, it was. It was hard at that point not to laugh. And the second half was just something you just watched out of. Just, it was like rubbernecking a car accident at stages of the second half, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't the best. I mean, thankfully they took a little bit of mercy on us and only scored the once. And missed the point extra, which was very kind, because I'm not sure I could have taken them scoring 43 and replicating the Super Bowl 48 score. You know, if this game does prove to be the end of an era, it would be pretty cruel, and if the score sort of was so similar to that one. So 2 points out, well, 1 point either way out is close enough. If it was any closer and it was either 43-7 or 42-8, it would have been just too cutting for me.
Yeah, the 35-point defeat is something that the Seahawks haven't suffered anywhere, but especially at home since, I think, was it 1997? I think last time they got handed such a defeat at home, and obviously with it coming against the Rams, it's been used in the media, both national and local, as some sort of passing of the baton. But it's not that simple, is it really? There's still life in the old dog left with even with the most recent beatdown in the memory, Adam.
I think if you take it sort of in isolation and you say that, you know, all 53 players will be back next season, then yeah, I think you would say it's premature. I think with the lack of draft picks that the Seahawks have next year, the aging players on defense and a lot of them earning a lot of money, you could see a situation where quite a few of these players aren't on the roster next year. Yeah. And if that is the case, then I would expect next year to be fairly rough, rougher than this year for sure. And so I guess to that end, you could say that the changing of the guard is accurate, because we're in a situation where we have to, you know, tweak stuff, whereas the Rams can just add. In the same way, you know, we've been lucky in the past few years that we've been in a great situation, and it's been other teams that have to, you know, change things and get rid of players. But no, I think, you know, the injuries can't be overlooked, because there's no way that, you know, a healthy defense gives up that many points. I mean, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure a defense with a healthy Bobby Wagner gives up that many points.
Not a chance, because there's just no way that, you know, Bobby Wagner is a better player than Todd Gurley, as great a player as Todd Gurley is. And yeah, if you say that's pretty much a matchup 1v1, I would back, you know, Bobby to hold him to half of the yards he had. So,
yeah,
you know, the problem is that everyone loves seeing the guy at the top of the castle kick down, and, you know, everyone's just reveling in this, and I don't blame them. We all do it when Dallas lose, or Pittsburgh lose, or New England lose, or whatever. So it's just our time to take a bit of a kicking. And it's going to be a very interesting next 12 months, because I don't think we can really tell how it's going to go from here.
No, it's a proper open-ended. Anything could happen, and nothing seems out of question, or would not really blindside anyone at this point. Todd Gurley, though, did go 21 rushes, 152 yards, and he was benched for pretty much all of the final 15, if not 20 minutes of the game, which is just an absolute... that's just a show. I think he got 48 points in our fantasy league and really pushed one of our teams into a final in our fantasy league with, yeah, just a ridiculous showing with the 3 touchdowns. The Rams did run for 244 yards in total, but for the Seahawks offensively, that's a pretty apt word. Russell Wilson, 14 for 30, 142 yards. It's his lowest passing total at home since the Seahawks lost to Dallas 3 or 4 years ago, where he only went, I think it's 136 yards he threw for that day. And it's just the ninth time in Russell Wilson's career that he's thrown for under 150 yards. But Russell Wilson had basically less time to throw than he ever has, and it was the most alarming thing. Possibly could have been the 7 sacks, Adam. Is that fair, or...?
Yeah, I mean, as much as the defense, the ones that gave up 42 points, you know, in isolation, this game is entirely on the offense and their lack of, you know, they were fully healthy going into this game on Sunday, give or take. You know, obviously Chris Carson's injured, but, you know, you could argue that Mike Davis has shown enough that they're probably just about awash, you know, in terms of ability right now, Davis versus Carson. So this team has got, you know, as we've labored before, a traded for left tackle, a free agent left guard, a third round center, a second round right guard, and a first round right tackle. The offensive line, you know, made a sieve look pretty non-porous. They were an embarrassment, and that set the foundation for the whole game. We couldn't run. We couldn't give Wilson any time. Wilson had one of his days where he sees ghosts in the pocket and was escaping when he didn't need to. And just, there weren't even, I can't really think of any, like, proper plays that the Seahawks ran at all. It was just like step back, launch it, two guys clash into each other. You know, I think when Lockett and Richardson ran the same route, that sort of summed it up for me.
I think literally the only play which looked how an NFL offensive play is supposed to look like is the touchdown to Luke Wilson. That was even disappointing for myself, because it wasn't Jimmy Graham and I needed all the points in fantasy. But yeah, it just did not look... It obviously clearly isn't sustainable. But it really, even with what the workover that they got in Jacksonville, a couple of weeks ago, the O-line seems to have turned the corner. Everyone, the pressure was alleviating from the coaching staff, it seems set. The five guys, I think we said in this podcast, the five guys we're seeing here, you're probably going to see them in 2018 for the most part. But now it's just another question to add onto the pile, isn't it?
Yeah, and like, it's, if there was one play that sort of summed up the game in the last 2 weeks, you know, you go into the Jacksonville game thinking that Russell Wilson is probably the leading contender to be the MVP of the NFL. And for me, that entirely went out the window when he threw the ball 22 yards behind himself. And we ended up in third and or second and 32.
Second and 33.
It was comically bad. Like, it's the type of play that if, you know, it's like butt fumble state of legendary in my opinion. If it was the, you know, like, if it's the wrong guy that makes it, it is the most. If Blake Bortles did that, yeah, it would be, you would see that play forever and a day, because it's Wilson, you'll never see it again, and he's lucky. But that sort of just summed up the whole last fortnight for me, that Wilson's gone from the MVP of the league to throwing it 23 yards backwards.
Yeah, it was what could have happened for the helmet catch in the Super Bowl by David Tyree if either man doesn't escape from the pass rush. It was just, I mean,
it was like, you know, a discus thrower in the Olympics. Yeah. You know, if they let go of the discus at the wrong time,
yeah,
that's sort of what that play was like.
Yeah. It's like if you played that in arcade, you would lose a life for just doing it wrong. It's just, yeah, it was not good. Also on your fence, J.D. McKissic managed to lead the running backs and lead receivers in rushing and receiving yards with 20 rush and 38 receiving yards. And it's just another example of how everything kind of exploded and went wrong on Sunday. I mean, J.D. McKissic would have been a long way down the list to go guess every player is going to lead the team in rushing and receiving in 2017.
Yeah, I mean, the yards I want to see McKissic get in the last two games are on returns. Yeah. Because if you compare the speed and explosiveness of Ferrell Cooper versus Tyler Lockett, it was like watching one in fast forward and one in slow motion. I really feel for Lockett, and I sort of hope that he has those responsibilities taken away from him and he can just focus on trying to become the best receiver he can be over the offseason and try and get some legs back, because the guy looks shot at the minute.
Some confidence or mentally is not quite there, it doesn't appear. I mean, it seems to be getting, he had a few flashes during the season, but it's something not quite there. It may just need a full off season of just focusing on the game, because obviously he did have a long rehab this off season. It does affect players when they don't have every opportunity to work out and not be rehabbing. I guess it's a different, you're doing different things, you're focused on different things, and Tyler Lockett is one person who seems to be suffering with that. But yeah, there's not, you can't really focus any more players. Luke Wilson, as you said, did score the one touchdown to end the end the chances of a shutout, which would have just been the cherry on top of what on Sunday. But as I mean, Doug Baldwin had one catch for 6 yards. Jimmy Graham had one catch for minus 1 yard, which meant he went back to 2,000 yards overall as a Seahawk. He nearly, if the yardage markings were probably a bit more accurate, he could have been the first Seahawks tight end to pass 2,000 yards twice in his career. But I mean, when you see two catches for 5 yards, it's from receiver A and receiver A1. The scoreboard's expected, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Pete Carroll is known for saying stuff like, you know, we tried to stay on schedule on offense.
Yeah.
And for him, schedule is running it effectively on first and second down and getting explosive plays and getting the best out of your big receivers. And, it, you know, the whole thing was just so off schedule from the first play. You know, Aaron Donald is just an incredible player. Robert Quinn always seems to save his absolute best for us. And it was just one of those games where they were just playing from behind the eight ball for the whole game. And it was almost like they forgot to get their, just forgot to get their big players involved. Yeah. Injury, I think you're right, is certainly a fact with Baldwin. And, you know, I think in a fortnight, he'll be under the knife, as you've mentioned, for a few weeks now. Yeah. And Jimmy, the way he's been treated and the way he acts, looks like a player who's not going to be here in a fortnight.
Yep, I'm slowly coming to the realization that this is. I mean, you could easily make the assumption that the banner free agents Richardson, Graham, Sheldon Richardson, you probably in the off season, none of them are going to be kept. I think that's going to be the first sign of to see where the team go is that free agency period to see the attempts they make to keep and if they manage to and the money they pay and just to see what happens to that is going to be the first signal of what 2018 and onwards can bring.
I think it's going to be just on that, and we'll talk about this a lot in the future, but with no second round and no third round pick, it's going to be pretty hard to find a receiver, I would say, early on. So I expect Paul Richardson to be maybe the one that's kept on, given the age of the other receivers that you've got. Yeah. And if Baldwin's going to be 30 soon. So I think he might be kept on just sort of out of unless he wants ridiculous money.
Yeah.
But I feel he probably will stay out of sort of necessity.
Yeah. Richardson kind of doesn't. I mean, NFL players don't owe any team anything, but they put up with a lot of. It was very CJ Prozise light in his first couple years in Seattle. So the fact he's done it over the past, went into the season 20 games about, it may lead into Seattle's favour, but you never know what teams within the salary cap, which is going to 190 million or whatever it is. There's going to be teams with deep pockets, and Seahawks won't have that in 2018. O-line, defensive line is yet again come up to some obviously with Sheldon Richardson, and there's been talk today on Twitter, obviously, which dissecting the trade they made for Sheldon Richardson. I've said it a few times, you've kind of talked me down. It doesn't appear to have paid off anywhere near where the Seahawks hoped, and Pete Carroll seemed to allude to that on Monday, Adam.
It hasn't, but it's one of those trades that, in hindsight, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And if the team was healthy, they would be a Super Bowl contender right now, and that is just a complete fact. And if they were healthy, they'd be in part a contender because you'd have Averill and Bennett going at full speed off the edges and Richardson up the middle. And, you know, you can't denigrate a trade because other factors outside it haven't made it work. Obviously, if you could have it back and you knew what was going to happen, you would want the trade back. But I think it's pretty harsh for like them to be slagging off the trade because it hasn't worked out. You know, it's not like he's been the problem at all. He's been a good player, a good Seahawk, and ultimately, you know, if Malik McDowell doesn't get on an ATV, we never have to have this problem. So,
yeah.
You know, Richardson is and Schneider for making the trade, which he pretty much had to make to fill the gap. I feel pretty anti like slagging them off for it.
Yeah, it was a deal they had to make, but I think the frustration comes with the fact it's just we've lost whatever pick it was. Obviously, we're going to get that back most likely in 2019, but the 2018 immediacy of the lack of payback on that trade is probably something that's going to lead to people being frustrated with the lack of clear, palpable impact that Sheldon has made. But that is possibly just being a slightly bit unfair on my part. But yeah, Frank Clark and Deion Jordan were the only two Seahawks who totaled a sack after a bagel in Jacksonville. Frank Clark now leads the team in sacks. But something which is quite alarming, we spent most of the off-season, most of the last season, saying we need that third guy to come through with Bennett and Clark. Obviously, Cliff Averill's missed most of the season. He's been out since week three. The team's third leading sack artist, Adam, is
Dwight Freeney?
Yep, with three sacks, and he's been in Detroit for a month. Obviously, the injury again is possibly giving this an asterisk, but it's the same issues we left 2016 with, we're leaving 2017 with, just with more questions to be asked, because one of those, and Cliff Averill probably isn't going to be there, and Michael Bennett might not be either for different reasons, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that we'll have like no defensive ends going into next season, which is not really an ideal position to be in. if you got Reed, Jones and Clark all healthy, that's not a maybe Deion Jordan stays if he can stay healthy, because he has shown, you know, flashes of being a decent player.
Yeah.
There's a lot of holes to fill in the summer, and, you know, I'll be, you know, don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but I have a hunch that next season is going to be tougher than this season, yeah, with the eye on the following year being the bounce back year.
Yeah, most definitely. I think someone pointed out, someone on Twitter yesterday, I think, pointed out this could be a case where the Seahawks are like the Steelers were for a couple of years after 2005 with Roethlisberger, where they kind of just bobbed along at 8-8 and 10-6, and then really hit on the draft with Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, and really just built the offense around their quarterback, which could be something transition we may be seeing in Seattle as well. I think that could be the way this team kind of operates, because as long as Russell Wilson's upright and playing for the Seattle Seahawks, they're going to be with a shout for most of the season, the most games, aren't they?
Yeah, and you know, that is, I'm not sure if you made, you know, that's a loaded sentence, because there has been quite a lot of talk this week on Twitter. I think people grandstanding a little bit and having too many followers and not enough to say, talking about the possibility of trading Russell Wilson in order to sort out the cap,
yeah,
and the trade. I will be incredibly frank in what I say, that if they do that, it would be the dumbest decision any franchise has ever made in NFL history.
Yeah, it would be up there with the Edmonton Oilers trading Gretzky in 1991 or whatever year that was. They haven't won a Stanley Cup. They won one Stanley Cup since. I mean, they named a bloody road after him in Edmonton. It would be the dumbest decision any sports franchise has made, possibly apart from Miami Marlins giving up on Giancarlo Stanton for basically nothing 2 weeks ago. But yeah, if there is a power struggle, which is what the people on Twitter are saying, that it could be one between Wilson wanting to play one way and Carroll wanting to stick to his philosophy, which, as we've mentioned in this podcast before, he is stubborn. He basically has earned his right to be stubborn with his success he's had over the last decade and a half. But if you're choosing a 29-year-old, if you're choosing a 66, 67-year-old coach who's got 2 or 3 years left over a 29-year-old quarterback who's got at least 10 years left if he stays healthy, it's just the most nonsense thing of all the nonsense things you see on social media.
Yeah, I think it's people trying to be too clever,
yeah,
because they've, yeah, been clever in the past, and they have to give off the aura that they're some, you know, ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
It would just be a nonsense. Like,
yeah,
if you trade Russell Wilson, you're in full rebuild. Full rebuilds take probably between 3 and 5 years,
yeah,
and then the head coach isn't going to be there for 3 to 5 years. So, yeah, if you're going to get rid of Wilson, you probably have to get rid of the head coach as well and start again, yeah, with the guy who knows what to do. So you sort of win neither way. And also, look at the teams who have won the last Super Bowls. Look at the names, the quarterbacks who have won them. Who was the last not good quarterback to win one? And I'll even say Peyton Manning, you know, knew when to throw it, when to run it, didn't turn the ball over. So I'm going to put him in the good quarterback range.
Yeah.
Who was the last good guy not to win it?
Flacco, probably, wasn't it? 2012, is that fair?
Well, it's not, because Flacco had one of the, like, a record-breaking month. So at that particular, yeah, okay, stage, you know...
Well, you'd probably have to go back all the way to Dilfer.
Dilfer, yeah.
Ravens, maybe Brad Johnson, the Buccaneers, with Gruden, which was, what, 2003?
Yeah, I mean, look, the point is,
yeah.
You can't win without a good quarterback.
Yeah.
You can't.
No, you can't. You're making one move to blow up the next 3 or 4 years. If you make a couple of moves, which would be as painful, which had been suggested by Michael Silvers of the world, there's such a smaller drop-off due to age and due to window the players have left to play. It makes no sense, and the people bringing it up just grandstanding and getting their soapbox at a time where everyone's looking for reasons, excuses, and also Russell Wilson is not the reason the Seahawks are missing the playoffs this year.
No, he's the reason we haven't got the first round. He's the reason we've got the first pick in the draft.
Yeah, pretty much. Is there anyone to come out with any sort of credit from Sunday, or is it just Sean McVay is just a bit of a genius?
Yeah, fair play to him. Fair play to the Rams. Todd Gurley is just a glorious guy to watch in full speed. And we were thoroughly outworked and outcoached on Sunday. We hoped it wouldn't happen. We hoped that the Eagles game would be, give us the kick at the backside to get going. But as we said 4 or 5 weeks ago, unfortunately, that Atlanta Falcons game was always going to be the one that was probably going to decide whether we were going to make the playoffs or not. And thus it looks like it's going to prove, because I don't think we're going to be able to make it now.
Yeah. It's still mathematically possible, and obviously there's a lot of people who believe it's possible. But if anyone's watched the Tennessee Titans for one thing over the last month or so, they do not look like a team that are going to do anything to stop.
I mean, the Lions, if they beat LA Cincinnati, if the Lions beat Cincinnati and Green Bay without Aaron Rodgers, they're in ahead of us anyway. So, yeah. And also we have to win two games.
Yeah. And we're also getting possibly the angriest running back in the world back facing a defense which gave up 250 rush yards 4 days ago. So but since the game, the 2018 Pro Bowl rosters have been announced. The Seahawks are sending linebacker Bobby Wagner, safety Earl Thomas, quarterback Russell Wilson, and tight end Jimmy Graham, which is just the perfect end to some of the nonsense he had earlier in the season. Wide receiver Doug Baldwin, defensive end Michael Bennett, safety Cam Chancellor, and kick returner Tyler Lockett, which is just a strange one, have been named as alternates. Is there any Seahawks who should be slightly annoyed by their lack of Pro Bowl acknowledgement, either as alternates or first ballot, Adam?
I can't think of any off the top of my head, it's just one big popularity contest, isn't it? It's a bit of a stupid thing, to be honest.
Yeah, it's. I mean, with Wagner, Wilson, and Jimmy Graham, you could say, yeah, that's on 2017. But Earl Thomas him playing has been made the impact, but he hasn't exactly showered himself in all the glory, especially in the last couple of hours or so. But obviously, that doesn't come into Pro Bowl voting. Blair Walsh is a pretty egregious absence, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the alternate to the alternate, you would imagine. To the alternate, to the alternate, to the alternate, to the alternate.
Yeah, well, he did miss a kick on Sunday, so there is one positive from Sunday.
Yeah, 100% record in the first half.
Yeah. That's all we asked for, Blair. Just obviously put that alongside more opportunities. But as we enter the final 2 weeks of the season, we have took the opportunity to catch up with someone who was a guest earlier on in the season. Myself and Adam spoke to Seattle PI's Michael Sean Dugar a couple of days ago, and here is our conversation with him.
Hello, this is Martin Opry, and go Hawks!
Right here on the Pedestrian Podcast, we are collecting a bit of some regulars, but like Cheers, just a lot more drinking, I guess. I guess I'm Norm in that analogy as well. So we always try and get people to come back on, and we'll be joined by one of those such people. Tonight we're again joined for the second time this season by Seattle PI's Michael Sean Dugar. How are we, sir?
I'm good. Got into a Star Wars marathon today. Didn't think I'd be doing that on my Tuesday afternoon, but other than that, I'm pretty good.
Yeah, but just to pull the curtain back, Adam and Mike were discussing all the merits of all the different films, and it was kind of like what people must be like when I talk wrestling or The Wire. I think on certain occasions I was completely and utterly lost and confounded. But Adam, you sounded like you're enjoying yourself.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it was good to sort of put off having to talk about the Seahawks. to pull the curtain back further, I poured myself a whiskey before we started, and I think the measure could only be described as hefty, which I think I'm going to need every last drop to get through this, because this could bring the pain. But, you know, here we are. We've got to do it through the good and the bad.
Yeah. So, Mike, obviously it's your first season, full season on the beat. How's it been since last time we had the opportunity to talk to you?
Was that in August? When was that?
It
was,
before the season started, yeah, I think.
I think it was just after Malik had his incident, I think.
Oh, yeah. Man, he got in the news again in an even worse way.
Oh, my God.
Didn't think that was possible.
One of our friends compared it to when the guy in Atlanta got arrested in the first series of that show, and it's absolutely perfect because all he does is swear at a copper and ends up having to pay bail and stuff. It was very reminiscent of it. But yeah, it just piled on.
And I think you gave us a play-by-play of the Frank Clark, Jermaine Effetti clothesline.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fun times. Things have changed since then.
Well, it is still the only thing. It's still the only thing Effetti has blocked all season. That clothesline. So.
it's amazing that Effetti. We asked Tom about him, Tom Cable, that is, and every time it's just, you know, cut down on the penalties. Other than that, he's playing well. It's kind of weird. He's so positive on his play, whereas everyone else is like, this is doom and gloom. We need a new right tackle.
Yeah. So obviously, we're talking a couple of days after the beatdown of all beatdowns in the Pete Carroll era. What was it like being in that stadium as obviously it emptied at a rapid speed? What was it like being in Centric Field on Sunday?
It was really, really weird. I mean, I wasn't around in like the 80s. Yeah. When Mike Tyson kind of withered, not Mike Tyson, sorry, Ali kind of withered away, or just, you know, at the end of his career, it felt kind of like that, not a full on change of the guard, passing the torch type thing that everyone's calling it, just like, wow, look how the mighty just falls, just look how bad they look at everything, you know, everything that they were good at before, whether this year or just in past years, just looked awful, all in just like an hour of real time. You know, they couldn't cover on special teams. Seahawks have been great at that, among the best. They couldn't stop the run. They've been great at that. You know, they couldn't move the ball. I mean, other than this year, they've generally been pretty good at that. It was stunning, you know. It was amazing to hear the fans boo the Seahawks, the 12th man boo the Seahawks as they went into the halftime locker room. That is amazing. Yeah. It's hard to really put in the right words. It's something, especially in a game of that magnitude, right? That was for everything. The type of stuff the Seahawks live for, you know, those quote unquote championship moments. And it really was just like watching, you know, the superhero in the movie just get beat down in the final fight scene and then just never get up.
Well, as we're on the Star Wars theme, you'll know by now that, you know, Luke becomes very liberated when he can fully use the Force. And in a way, when Todd Gurley ran that touchdown on 3rd and 20, I almost found it liberating because I've kind of feared a game like this was coming. And I kind of feared that maybe we just, with all the injuries at some point, this was going to get ugly. And I almost felt watching it like, okay, I can just sit back and relax now because this is just the way it's going to be and it's not going to be our year. Obviously, professionals can't feel like that, but since the week has, you know, gone, is there any feeling like that, that at least we know what we are now and we can start again for next year?
I didn't get that from the guys in the locker room after, and none of the guys from the podium, just, you know, because they know it's not over till it's over. And if any team knows that, it's Seattle. You know, they've been dead in the water, especially anyone who played in the NFC title game against Green Bay. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, if you played in that game, even if you watch the game or you're aware of it, you never say never. I mean, I think ESPN or maybe 538, someone had them as a 2% chance to win that game at some point in the fourth quarter, and they come back and win. Right. So then you got a team led by Russell Wilson. Right. And he's mm-hmm. the king of never say the game can be over. And he's like, oh, no, if we get the ball again, we'll go win. You know, it's like, no, Russell, the game's over. He's not going to get the ball again. But, you know, he's that guy. Now, are the fans like that? It doesn't seem so, just because, like, all of the Seahawks scenarios to make the playoffs involve them winning every game that they play from this point. That's only two games. But judging by how the last two went, you can't even really be that confident that they'll go to Dallas, stop Ezekiel Elliott, and get a road win, right? Like, how confident can you be of them doing that? It's just, even if they get Bobby and KJ back, you know, just how, I mean, even with Bobby and KJ, Leonard Fournette still ran for over 100. Yeah. You know, like how confident can you be? That's where I kind of see why everyone's kind of down in the dumps about the rest of the year. That doesn't mean blow everything up and become the Browns or the Jets, but, or the Giants, I guess I should say. but it doesn't seem like obviously the Seahawks aren't going to give up. They got too many guys who only want one thing at the end of the year. You know, it's just like getting to the divisional round isn't enough for a guy like Doug Baldwin or Russell or Pete or John, you know, or the fan base, really. You know, I mean, there's too many guys who are like title or bust on this team for that. And if there's a chance, they'll take their 2% chance to win a division, you know, because that's better than zero that a lot of teams have, you know, entering week 16. You know, but it just looks so slim. You know, it seems like they have the steepest uphill battle to go just to even get in the playoffs. And at that point, how scary are they? How scary are the Seahawks at 10-6, you know, having to go to Carolina, right? Like how mm-hmm. how scary are they at that point? You have to think about that too. It's so there's a dark cloud over the Seahawks right now, but it ain't over. I guess they can say that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much of the playoffs, trying to win a game type mentality. I got to be honest, like I'm so you know, the way I'm wired is that my sports nerves manifest themselves as negativity. You know, we could be 50 points up in the Super Bowl with 5 minutes to go. I'm still, you know, I'll take a tie. Like that's just the way I am. And for me, I'm looking at that Dallas game and thinking they're a proud group of players, but the Seahawks are notoriously bad losers for one, you know, rightly or wrongly, you know, always compete. The Jacksonville stuff at the end of the game, pretty ugly to watch, but that's just the way that they are as a team. And I don't know, I just feel like especially a team like Dallas have been waiting years and years to get the Seahawks like this. And for me, I'm worried it could turn pretty ugly again.
You know, you would hope it doesn't. I got concerned, right? Because obviously I'm new on the beat. So I got concerned when I first heard Pete Carroll say he doesn't really coach how to lose, which I thought was concerning until it was pointed out to me that he's said something like that before. And it's just like, well, why has no one addressed that? It's like you need – because when you say I don't teach how to lose, right, really how that comes across when your players are throwing punches like they were on Sunday. Delano Hill threw like three. Or when, you know, Michael Bennett's going at someone's knees or Quentin Jefferson tries to climb into the stands after he gets ejected. It looks like, Pete, when you say stuff like that afterwards, that you're saying you don't teach sportsmanship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's important, right? It doesn't win or lose. You need to be a good sport, you know, at the end of the day. That doesn't mean you need to go after the game and go shake everyone's hand and go congratulate everybody. But it can't be punches. It can't be going at guys' knees. It can't be extra pushing and shoving because you're frustrated that you're losing. You're right. It just can't be that. I mean, those things are hard to predict. I don't know if it'll happen, you know, at Dallas. It's hard to tell who those antagonists are. Right. Like, I didn't realize Jalen Ramsey of Jacksonville was, you know, I didn't realize. You just don't realize who some guys are because, you know, you can't really pay attention to each guy on each team. You know, I didn't think Quentin Jefferson had it in him to go climb into the stand you know, until he tried it, you know. So you never really know. I hope it doesn't come to that because you don't want that reputation, because then that's just going to lead to – it's just going to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, guys are going to – the smart guys are going to realize they can get to you.
Yeah.
You know, like it looked like – I can't remember the guy's name on Jacksonville. The guy who kept going up against Ifedi a bunch of times. His name's
Fowler, wasn't it? Dante Fowler?
Yeah. He ended up getting a few illegal hands to the face, I think, against Jermaine, but he was getting to Jermaine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could just tell that they had a thing going where he knew on the scouting report somewhere, if I get inside this guy's head, he'll jump off sides, he'll hold, he'll do this, he'll do that. And you know, you don't want that reputation, because then the refs have it and then the league has it, and then you won't get situations where Michael Bennett avoids a suspension, even though he, you know, could have just ended a guy's career with a legal takedown below his knees.
Yeah, so obviously it's been about 6 weeks or so since we last saw Sherman and Chancellor on the field. What role have you seen them play? Obviously, we don't see them on the field, but we see them on the sidelines on Sunday. What role have you seen them take up in the last 6 weeks, walking around the building, in that building?
I haven't seen Sherman much after like the first week. You know, he's not really around. He was there for that one practice on the scooter, maybe the right after he mm-hmm. got hurt. So he got hurt on a Thursday. I think that next Wednesday practice he was out there. Didn't see Cam. Haven't really seen. They're up all at the games and everything, but just don't see them much around the facility. At least not when we're there. Maybe they come in the morning and get treatment and things like that. But it's clear just talking to guys that they're obviously still in communication with each other. You know, I mean, Richard Sherman just did his latest Players Tribune thing and had Cliff, you know, at his house. And I guess that was the first time Cliff had ever seen Richard's house, because he said he walked in and, you know, if he had any thoughts about retirement, he gave him up, because Richard's house was so big and he needs to get more money. I knew Richard's house was big, but I didn't. And maybe it looks cooler inside than the pictures we had on the PI site a few years ago.
Because
he bought the house from Jamal Crawford. So, you know, we knew that. We got pictures of the house. But anyway, I haven't seen him much. And it's probably to a point where the guys just need to get what they get from them, like in the film, behind the scenes stuff. Bradley said he talks to Cam. I think Bradley McDougal said he's been to Cam's house. I don't know if something like that's happening with Byron Maxwell. I know Shaquille is just a sponge when it comes to information, no matter who it comes from, whether it's the coaches, whether it's Richard, whether it's whoever. But even then on the sidelines, you know, just from what I've seen, it seems pretty subdued as compared to, you know, how Richard was right after, he got hurt, or maybe the game right after he got hurt. But it doesn't mean that they're not helping behind the scenes. It just doesn't seem as public as it was when, you know, they at least Richard, when he was first injured. Because, you know, Cam doesn't seem like he was really that rah-rah guy other than, you know, the beginning of the game when they break the huddle.
Yeah.
And even then, I don't think he did that the first game that he missed either. No. I think they just broke the huddle really, really plainly. That was kind of sad. Like, that they've got the best pre-game thing, that, you know, the we shall turn up. That's great. To see them not do it, that's when I felt like, oh man, this really might be over if they don't even do that anymore. And then maybe they saw my tweet, because after that they did it. They've done it every game since. So I think I deserve credit for that.
You're an influencer for sure. I mean, yeah, if that's like after one season, imagine what's going to be at the end of next year. I mean, you could be raising the 12th man flag. Who knows? Could be anything. I'm sure you probably may have seen Michael Silver's slightly strange article where he sort of just casually dropped the fact that the entire Seahawks defense won't be there next year, which seemed a little bit over the top to me. Is there any feeling like it could be the end of an era from a personnel point of view, and that just the way that the business goes and the way that cap space needs to be created and whatnot, that this just could be the last time that we get to see these guys, you know, same uniform, same sideline? You know, the Earl and Bobby stuff got a bit chippy. It just doesn't seem like everything's all that well on the defensive side, and in terms of personnel, it could be an entirely different group this time next year.
The end of an era thing, right? I've been debating with people about this on mm-hmm. online for a couple of days.
I used that deliberately because you made some really interesting comments on it, so I wanted to know your views on that.
Because the end of an era, right? It depends. Well, first you have to define the era. I think someone did ask me that, and clarifying that is very important, right? Because if it's just a lot of times when you define an era, you get like I can't remember any coaches' names at the moment. But let's say you get like Belichick, Tom, Belichick, Brady, right? That's an era. If you want to go Pete Russell, no, that era is not ending, because, you know, where are either of them going? Well, Pete could retire, I guess, but he's the youngest, oldest coach in the league, so it's hard to predict that, right? So, but if you go Pete Russell, the defense,
yeah,
I guess there's an argument that there's the beginning of the end, but I mean, it's also the NFL, right? It takes us one injury for the beginning of the end to happen at any time. But there's also the flip side where, okay, cool. Richard's hurt. Cam is hurt. Cliff is hurt. Let's say, you know, let's assume Bobby and KJ are back just this next year.
Mm-hmm.
If you have Richard back, if you have Cam back, if you have, even if you have Cliff back, right, you have, I'm trying to think of who all missing any bigger injuries. Yeah, that's basically the, you know, on the defensive side of it, right? I think they'll all be, if I'm not mistaken, 32, 30, and 31. Right, they're not running backs though. Like, that's not the end of the world. You know, that it sucks to call it the running backs like that, but it's the truth. You know, they're not running backs. You know, we've seen defensive players have Pro Bowl and All Pro years after injury, and, you know, into their 30s. I mean, the way we're looking at injuries is kind of interesting, right? I mean, Earl broke his leg last year and he's fine. Yeah. He looks just fine. You know, we saw what happened with Adrian Peterson a few years ago. That's the most miraculous thing I've seen, I think, in sports, what he was able to do after just tearing his knee up. You know, we've seen it. You know, Aaron Rodgers broke his collarbone just this year, came back, played last week. You know, the players, and how old is Aaron? I mean, you can play. You know, Gronk gets hurt every year, and then every year he comes back and he's still the best tight end in the league. So it just depends on how you want to view it. If you want to call it the end, you can probably make arguments for it, like Mike Silver did with the cap situation and all that. But trying to predict it just from a here's what's happened, here's the money situation now, and just based on how it is now, here's what's going to happen in the next 8 months. That's just dangerous to do, right? And I haven't even been in the NFL business that long to know that anything – it takes just one day, one random move to just shake everything, right? Mm-hmm. Like in March, who would have thought in March, right, that the Seahawks lead running back would be Mike Davis, Jimmy Graham would have, or not, lead running back would be Mike Davis, your left tackle will be Dwayne Brown, and you'd be starting Sheldon Richardson, right, in March. who's thinking all of those things, right? Like you don't because it you know, and Jermaine Kearse wouldn't be here. Like think about that for a second. All of those things. Like it took just a wild groin injury or thigh bruise or whatever it was to even keep just Jeremy Lane here. You know, just there's too many moving pieces in the NFL, right? There's too many things that could happen. John Schneider and his staff just can just pull anything, you know, out of the hat at any time. So I don't think the era's really over. It's supposed to, you really can't call that when they're all under contract still, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Earl's still under contract. Sherman's under contract. And Cam just got an extension. So, I mean, as long as you got those three, Russell's on the contract forever, and he's a lifetime Seattleite, basically. So, I mean, if you got Pete, Russell, Cam, Earl, Sherman, I don't think you're ending anything, right? Unless you just think that Sherman will never walk again and Cam will never play again. Cam might not, but at this point, we don't know. And it's hard to tell who will know. I think the most important thing in that silver piece, kind of staying on that because it was super interesting, is the talk with Earl.
Yeah.
Because Earl hasn't spoke glowingly about, you know, being here long term like everyone else has. Earl seems to be like, look, it's business. I'm here. I'm a ball for my brothers, yada, yada. You know, but I mean, when we talked to him, like, after his retirement stuff, he tweeted that retirement thing in December. What he talked to him in, like, August. For one of the first things he mentioned was Eric Berry and the money he got. Mm-hmm. He was like, you know, there's never enough of that. So when Mike mentioned that, you know, sources close to the situation or whatever it was, you know, that Earl was going to want a lot of money. Yeah, that seemed like the most interesting part. Everything else was just, there's two ways to look at all of it. There's, oh, yeah, Cam's hurt, so he'll never play again. And it's like, oh, maybe Cam will just come back off IR and just play well. You know, it just depends on how you want to look at it, how pessimistic, I guess, you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So with the end of an era stuff, though, do you think it's more feasible than likely with the offensive coaches that they have? Obviously, the Pete Carroll, apart from Jeremy Bates, hasn't fired an offensive coach. Obviously, you've got Tom Cable and Darrell Bevell, who weekly and daily get a lot of attention and coverage with Tom Cable more than any other position coach pretty much in the league. Do you think that's the likely thing to be broken up this offseason, or is it a similar story with those three?
I need to make this clear for everyone listening. Pete, John, everyone, no one hates Tom Cable and Darrell Bevell as much as fans, right? That is just, that energy will never be matched by the people in the organization.
To be clear, we're Bevell fans on this podcast. Yeah. He's not catching the ball. He's not dropping it. He's not fumbling it. He's not throwing it 22 yards behind the line of scrimmage or 5 yards in front of the line. So we're Bevell fans, just to make that clear.
Yeah.
There's two sides to look at Bevell. There's like, oh, okay, cool. The offense just looks like it has never played together sometimes in first halves or second halves or whatever. And then there's years where, oh, they just go break all the records in franchise history under Darrell Bevell and Tom Cable. I mean, it's another thing. It depends on how you just want to look at it. If you want to look at just the offensive line and just, oh, yep, Fetty's bad, Glinsky's bad, or whoever's bad, these guys are bad, these guys are bad, these guys are bad, get Cable out of here. Well, it's just like, well, look what he did in the past with this. I mean, coaches are judged on their track record just like the players. Yeah. Now, could there be changes? Of course. The Seahawks aren't afraid to go get a new coach, hire a coach, and make a coach. You know, Seahawks aren't afraid to do any of that. I don't think it'll be, oh, man, fans are right. Darrell Bevell's an idiot. We're going to get him out of here. No, because like you said, Darrell doesn't drop the ball. He's never dropped a pass.
No.
He's never thrown an interception.
No.
Tom Cable's never given up a sack. You know, he's never been called for false start. You know, it's just that's just not how it works. You know, like part of what makes Russell really great is his improvisation, right? So I mean, Darrell, the good and the bad, how much is, you know, Darrell responsible for? Like, some of it's got to be on Russell. I mean, he looked just as bad as anyone else on Sunday, right? I mean, in against Philly, I think Darrell Bevell called probably the best game of the year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had a – I think maybe it was Jacksonville or Philly. They called a recently. They called like a play action screen that was just designed perfectly. You know, I think maybe that was Jacksonville. I can't remember, but.
Is that, you know, when Luke Jokel was downfield and gave away the penalty, which pulled it back?
Yes,
that was a great play.
Yes. Yeah, I think that is. And that was beautiful. A play action screen. That's dangerous, too, because, you know, your lineman basically free release. So if you risky enough to do the play action, you're basically leaving Russell there to die for a little bit unless he can get it out real quick. And then as soon as he dumps it to Mike, he should have green like he did. Like, that's a well-designed play. The play designed to get Jimmy Graham his touchdown against Philly was really good, because Malcolm Jenkins had it right, had it read well, but they designed it well to get Jimmy a little bit of space without being called for an OPI, and boom, got him a touchdown. I mean, Darrell's done some good things, and then there's times offense looks bad. I mean, that's everyone else, right? Mm-hmm. Doug can have a great day where he catches 100 yards and then have a game with two catches or something like that. Same with Jimmy Graham. Can't just fire everybody, right? I mean, it just doesn't.
You should read our Facebook group at the end of the game. they'll try.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh, my mentions on Twitter are just like, you know, Effetti gives up a sack. You know, fire Tom Cable, cut Effetti. It's like, guys, it just doesn't work like that. You just can't just keep shuffling pieces. Although that's exactly what they do on the offensive line, but it just doesn't work like that. Now, could there be some coaching changes off? Yeah, sure. I mean, it won't be as quick triggered as maybe the fans want it to be.
Yeah, and obviously with Bevel, before, if not this Sunday, definitely Jacksonville game, the offense was top 10 with no running game. Obviously, I know a lot of that is why Wilson is in the MVP, but he's still doing a lot. He's still doing the business as it is. But yeah, Tom Cable might be a different thing. Adam?
Yeah, I think the Cable thing's interesting because for the first time, you know, I think all five starters are currently like top 70 draft picks. But, you know, I think we discussed this initially when you were first on, Mike, that, you know, we don't see his influence in the locker room with other stuff. And, you know, I personally wouldn't be disappointed to see Tom Cable go, because the line hasn't been great. And there's been examples of lines like New England's that was bad and they changed their coach and it was good. But, you know, I'm just an idiot fan, you know, watching the games and not getting any insight. So I guess from the outside looking in, the NFL seems like 100 miles an hour at all times. But from the inside, it's probably a bit more serene than that and a bit more calm and circumspect.
Well, I don't even blame people who won't think, okay, this time is up. Because, I mean, from the national perspective, right? When you talk to national guys who don't, like, follow the Seahawks, like, day to day, like we all do, they're all thinking, okay, what do we think of when we think of Seattle? We think of that defense, we think of Russell Wilson, we think of Pete Carroll, oh, and they don't have an offensive line. And they think that because it's the same every year. Everybody I just named is there every year. You know, the defense, the Russell and Pete, and the offensive line. It's very rare you enter the year and it's like, oh, Seahawks offensive line will be better. You know, like there's the years the Seahawks offensive line is the worst in the league. And then the next year, people project it to be even worse somehow. Like, so I actually do get that. Like, Tom can be great in the locker room or with the film or, you know, being, you know, helping guys learn or whatever. But I mean, it's the product at the end of the day. You know, if they were the best offensive line in the league, he'd go get a new job. Right. And then if you coach the worst offensive line in the league, you probably get fired. I mean, that's just how the business works. So, I mean, the people, I guess I should say that too, for the people who are like, I get Tom out of here. There's an argument for that too. Again, it just depends on how you want to look at it, because there's no way around it. The Seattle offensive lines have been pretty bad, right? I mean, if Russell wasn't the magician that he is, I mean, this team's looking at never making the playoffs, right? No matter how good that defense is. I mean, Russell can escape like no other. I mean, you look at teams who give up a lot of sacks and their quarterback isn't as mobile. You know, I mean, Andrew Luck, for example, gets beat up. You know, a lot, and that's why he's out right now, because their offensive lines are bad, or, you know, guys who take a bunch of hits. Cam Newton used to take a bunch of hits. You know, like Russ, the fact that Russell doesn't take a bunch of hits despite being under pressure all the time, and his numbers are still great under pressure, like that's amazing right there. So, I mean, I do get it for people who aren't, you know, Cable fans. I guess I should say that.
Yeah. Adam?
So you mentioned when you were first on that, you know, being inside the NFL, you know, changed your perspective from, you know, being a fan of the sport to a fan of the team and how that worked and, you know, various player perspectives. you know, now that the season's going, you must have seen a whole bunch of stuff that's been, you know, quite eye-opening. Anything in particular that stands out from a from that perspective that has just, you know, changed your views on a few things?
That's a good question. I think one thing that was just reinforced for me was just like how dangerous and like how dangerous football is, not from just the, like that it's guys running into each other type stuff, just how dangerous it is, like how guys look at it, right? You're viewed as tough if you play through a broken leg or something like that, you know, or like guys feel they have to prove themselves, like whether it's to their friends or their teammates or to the opponent, if you're like, ah, nah, my leg is fine, but really you're icing it 12 hours a day just to be able to walk, but you're still willing to go out there and play football. Like Richard Sherman was an example. It's like, oh yeah, he knew his leg was gonna tear. Mm-hmm. Like he knew his foot would tear, but he's still out there. And they're like, why? It's like, well, I had to be out there for my guys. It's like, well, that no, you don't, man. You need to walk. You need to be able to walk. Like that's a lot more important than anything these guys think is your ability to walk, right? That was one of the first things that got reinforced to me. It's like, man, football is dangerous in that way because it's a mindset, right? No one has to tell Richard that. It's been built into his brain over the years by playing the sport, whether it's coaches or parents or just teammates or whatever. That's built. That's like internal. It's like brainwashing almost. That's kind of scary. Well, that was the first thing. Another thing reinforced was just how tough it is for those fringe guys. I know no one really cares about them, but just mm-hmm. how often you can be cut, added to this practice squad, then cut because they need you to do this, and then you're cut and added here. They tell you to stick around because they might need you again. So you're like getting a part-time job or selling cars or, you know, living with your parents or something like that, just hoping the Broncos call or, you know, just something like just hoping that you're just sitting around waiting. And it just happens to so many guys on every team, and it's just ruthless. You know, they sign you one week and it's the greatest thing ever, and then, oh, they don't need you anymore. They just go cut you, but say, hey, stick around. Don't fly to Miami. We might need you. You know, just things like that. That got reinforced. How angry you have to be to play football. That got reinforced.
Have you got any examples of that?
I think what you see from like when you hear guys say what they do, they get in their mode to mm-hmm. go get on the field. Like you'll see the guys like a Cam Chancellor who would like this gorgeous GQ Man of the Year smile, right, when he walks into the arena. And then he goes out there and he lays a hit on somebody and he's just screaming testosterone everywhere. Mm-hmm. And just like, wait, how does he get like that? And you ask him, it's like, oh, yeah, I go into this dark place before I go out there. And it's just, what? That's not. Imagine if we all had to go in like some angry place to go do our job every day. Someone would call us like clinically insane. Like, it's like wait, you have two of you? You need to be angry to go do your job? Like Richard Sherman, the same way, you know. Yeah. NFL Films released like a 5-minute clip of him like mic'd up.
That was great. I saw that. I saw you tweet that today. It was brilliant.
Yeah, he's just swearing at people all day, telling people they suck and everything. And then, but then like off the field, he's just this great, nice guy who will just ask about your kids, joke with you about the NBA. And it's just like, when does he get angry? It's like, oh, when he goes and does his job. Because you have to be angry to do this.
Yeah.
Like there are some exceptions like that I've seen. You know, Thomas Rawls, everyone says he runs angry. He says he runs with love. So I don't know how loving it feels to get a shoulder to the helmet from Thomas Rawls. Probably doesn't feel any love there. But he says he runs with love. But like there are reasons people say he runs angry, right? Because it looks like it. You got to look angry out there.
Yeah.
But, so those things got reinforced. The locker room cultures. Kind of interesting too, not locker room talk, like talking about women and stuff a bunch mm-hmm. of the time, but just like there are, at least in this locker room, like there is, it's not like a divide, but I mean that you see the D-line guys hang out with the D-line guys, the O-line guys hang out with these guys, and like you hear the country music coming from this side of the locker room, and you hear the down south music coming from this side of the locker room, and you hear the Christian music coming from one side, one corner of the locker room. I mean, there are guys who hang out with other guys who aren't in their position group, like Thomas Rawls or Frank Clark are best friends, for example. But because they both went to Michigan together, so I mean, you get those, the college guys, the guys who are all like from LA or whatever. But I mean, you that just seeing like, oh man, this is just high school with more money for the most part. Like now there's Twitter, so there's just as much drama as high school. Yeah. Bobby hopped on Twitter right away.
Yeah.
And called out Earl. You know, so I mean, there is that. But I do get also how they can like say, oh, there's distractions. But, you know, they play through that type of stuff because these guys do that every day.
Yeah.
Right. Whether it's their families in the hometown, there's a hurricane there, or you saw the guy in the 49ers, him and his wife or girlfriend lost a child before, you know, the day before a game. Kids get sick. You get an argument with your significant other, you know, get in a car accident, you know, you argue with your parents, you know, you're just having a bad day for whatever it is. Yeah. You gotta check that at the door when you hit the VMAC. You gotta check that at the door when it's game day.
Yeah.
And to see those guys do it, you can visibly see it on some guys. You can see it's like, oh, you know what, he ain't feeling it today. He ain't himself. He's not joking with the guys in the locker room. He's just, he's headphones on, buried in his locker, buried in his phone. So to see that, and then to see those guys maybe the next game have a great game or even have a bad game, and you kind of know why. Yeah. That's kind of an interesting kind of behind the scenes part of it. Kind of humanizes the guys a little bit.
Yeah, obviously over the course of the season with the rookies this year, obviously Ethan Pocic over the last month or so, and obviously Shaquille Griffin pretty much since minute one. Have you seen any like comfort level with them change within the locker room? Obviously you said earlier that Shaq is just a sponge. Have you seen it? Is that something, or is there more like a comfort in their surroundings has emerged over the last 3-4 months?
Oh, with the rookies?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like they all kind of, at least the ones who like know their like spot was secure, kind of fit in, you know, pretty well. And then at the end of the day, they all have like their rookies to hang out with.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of helps. I think Tedrick Thompson's locker is right next to Shaq's, and Delano Hills is right next to Mike Tyson's, and they went through the process all together and all the rookie stuff. So at the end of the day, if they have nothing else, they got their other rookies. Mm-hmm. So I think there's that part of it. But it seems like once you get in your position group, it becomes pretty tight. You know, I think everyone's from what I can tell, man, most guys' best friends is someone else in their position group.
Yeah.
For the most part, I think there's some exceptions like Russell. I think Russell might be tight with Justin Britt, I think. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I mentioned Thomas and Frank. But for the most part, you see guys are hanging out with guys, listening to music with guys, and talking to guys, and dinner with guys who are, you know, in their position. Your position group is your real family. Yeah. is what I'm getting. That's, again, it's really like high school, just with a lot more big watches and big chains and strange outfits. Although I had strange outfits in my high school. I don't know if you guys did too.
I went to an all boys school. We had to wear a suit, so it was a limit to how interesting the outfits could be. But you know, some people rocked some interesting suits. This is probably something that maybe only a fan would even care about, and the players and people inside the game just brush off. But I found the Dwight Freeney release quite awkward and difficult is the wrong word. But this is a guy who is a first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the great players of the game. And he mentioned when he joined how excited he was and, you know, how much thought there was going into joining Seattle. And then I found it quite uncomfortable that he was just put on the waiver wire just to join the, you know, the cattle cart with the rest of the guys. Inside the game, is that just something that's just accepted as part of the game, or does it become, you know, does Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett see a guy in their position sort of treated maybe not in the best way, or is it just brushed off as just part of the game?
I think a lot of the guys understand, most of the guys we've talked to understand that it is a business. You know, they do get it. Like, even especially Dwight, he gets it. But like you hear, but answer your question about the other guys. Seeing, yes, they definitely pay attention to how other guys are treated, how much other guys get paid. You know, they have to. I mean, they all talk about all that. You know, it's 2017. They all read everything, whether they like to admit it or not. They read everything. Everything gets sent to them, you know, by their friends or family members or agents or whatever. They read tweets. They see your Instagram comments. They see press conferences. They see quotes. They watch ESPN. They do all that. They see, oh, like him, you know, Earl and Richard, you know, they're like, oh, you know, we expect new contracts in August probably. Let's see what they do with Cam. Oh, they give Cam $30 million. Cool. That's good. That makes me think they'll give me $30 million. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's real obvious for those guys. They want to see how they're going to be treated. Dwight was a little bit of a different example. He was just a pickup off the street, basically, and he was expensive pickup off the street for a team in terms of a team that doesn't really have a lot to play with. Mm-hmm. And they figured, it's not like they figured, well, I mean, we thought we could get him back because it's not like there was a bunch of people after him as is, right? Mm-hmm. And then so they pick him up. He looks good for two games, one of them against like a third string left tackle that he just feasted on. And then he looked kind of just pedestrian in the next two. So they figured we let him go. We get him back, and they had to make some moves with, you know, guys who could do a little bit more probably. Cause I mean, it's not like Dwight was playing special teams or a lot of, you know, running down. So there's a way to justify it. Then on the flip side, it's like, oh man, they gave up Dwight Freeney so they wouldn't lose David Moore, seventh round pick. So that they don't use. So there is two sides of that too. Like I get the business side of it and the football part of it. And then, yeah, I was like, wait, I thought they were going to lose David. Okay, I guess. Activate him and just make him in. Put him on the roster and made him inactive all week every game, I guess. But again, yeah, Dwight didn't look. It's not like Dwight looked amazing. I think he played four games. Yeah. And I think in two, he had like three sacks. But again, I think he feasted on like Washington's third string left tackle, I want to say. Like Washington was playing with a more beat up line than Seattle was somehow.
So, I mean, still won.
It's right. Yeah. I don't even think their quarterback threw a touchdown and they still won.
Right.
I mean, there's some. The performances that they've lost on the road on like, or they've lost at home on some like weird stuff, right? It's like Kirk didn't throw a touchdown, I don't think, and Matt Ryan had his lowest passing yardage of the year, I think, and it's, you know, and neither of those teams could run the ball in those respective games, and they both beat the Seahawks. I don't get it. Neither game really made sense in that regard. Like that, that's bad.
I mean, a guy that can kick the ball through the sticks often helps win games as opposed to the left or the right of the sticks. But I can't talk about Blair Walsh because it's too late and I'll get too angry.
That's true. I forgot about that part.
So there's just a few things. Is Dwayne Brown the largest human as he appears to be on pictures and on the TV screen? He seems like he's just the biggest person in the world.
For me, for some perspective, I'm about 5'8", about 150, right? So these guys are all huge to me.
Yeah.
I mean, well, except for some of the guys. I mean, like Paul Richardson's pretty skinny. I mean, me and him are probably just about as skinny as one another. Like I feel connected to Paul in that way because we are both. I mean, somebody said it, Paul had scrawny legs the other day, and he was like, are my legs scrawny? Like it was a revelation for him, and I was like, dude, you don't know. Yeah, so thin legs. Yeah. Standing right next to him, I'm like, yeah, that's not news to anyone here. And I guess I look Doug in the eyes, so I guess everyone else, man, these guys. I was talking to Jordan Roos the other day. He's huge. I mean, Dwayne Brown is just massive.
If Fedi looks like a statue almost, how big the guy is.
Oh man, offensive linemen are pretty big. Like it's pretty scary. But even like, because I mean, we're in there and like guys. You know, coming out the shower and all things like that. That takes some getting used to, by the way. But, like, they're just walking out, and you're just like, man, I need to go hit the gym later because this is unfair. Like, Michael Wilhoit looks like a tank. Like, Bobby Wagner just looks like one just massive, like, protein shake commercial. He's, like, perfectly built. It's a mate, Cam Chancellor. It's like, these guys, like, wow, football players are in shape, man. I need to go hit the gym. Yeah. This is pretty – I mean, Jimmy Graham's huge.
Yeah,
I mean we don't get to talk to him in the locker room, or I guess we could.
How's that allowed that he can't talk to you? Does he not have to talk if he wants? Because there was the whole thing with There was the whole bit about Marshawn Lynch. You know, was going to get fined. Why doesn't Jimmy Graham talk to the media? Does he not have to?
No, they have to. I mean, like they trotted him out there after the Texans game. Yeah, that sounds right. I guess like theoretically he's available. to go talk to. You know, it's like he's not just chilling in his locker on his phone like a lot of the guys are for that, like, hour we're in there. So, I mean, you could probably go up and talk to him. He might just blow you off. Like, they don't have to talk every day. I have to go check the rule on if they have to talk every week. Because, like, a lot of the guys, there's some guys I haven't talked to all year, I don't think. Jimmy's one. Trying to think. I don't think I've personally talked to Eddie Lacy. No, yeah, I have. CJ Procise, I guess, is one I don't think I've talked to. John Ryan. There's some guys, like, you don't. It's the part of it is, well, the guys who don't want to talk, chances are if we do talk to them, they won't say anything anyway.
Yeah.
You know, that's the part of it for me. I don't know how it is for the rest of the guys in the media room, but if I see someone like Jimmy who's just like clearly just doesn't want to talk to us, like, it's pretty clear. It's like, oh, well, I'm not going to force the issue, because then if I get up there, he's just going to say something. He's going to repeat himself, you know, go Marshawn, I don't want to get fined. I mean, something I really want to use anyway, and it's just going to annoy me as is, and just waste my time. So why do it? All right. So they do have to answer your question. But if, like, I think the Marshawn thing came about because a national writer, if I'm not mistaken, came and pressed the issue on that. I don't think that was local. I think the local media was just fine talking to who was willing to talk, because there's so many guys in that locker room who are just great talkers that you don't need to go beat a quote out of Marshawn Lynch, who, if you don't want to talk to you, you know, won't give you anything good anyway. You know, Doug will talk. Richard will talk. Cliff will talk. Mike Bennett will talk. Thomas Rawls will talk. Eddie Lacy will talk. Russell Wilson will talk. You know, it's everyone will talk. KJ will talk. KJ talks every day. You know, for how long you want to talk to him. Same with Frank Clark. Talks every day. It's great. Sheldon Richardson, every day, and he's great. Justin Britt, Luke Wilson. Like, if you need to go beg Jimmy Graham for some soundbite, go ahead. But I think all of us have just figured if we don't need to, then we're not going to go force the issue. That's how it is for me. I don't want to speak for everyone else. But, yeah, I've learned that the guys who don't want to talk won't say anything good anyway. So you're wasting everybody's time.
So you just mentioned Luke Wilson. Obviously, the season's more than likely going to end in 2 weeks. So are you looking forward to not having to live through another Techno Thursday for the six months or so?
I'm a bit more concerned that Luke, who doesn't follow me on Twitter, is well aware that I'm not a fan of Techno Thursday. He said it to me twice now, and I'm just like, wait a minute. You know, the first time he was like, hey, are you the guy who's not a fan of Techno Thursday? I was like, whoa, where did this come from? This wasn't during an interview. He just walked up. I'm like, wait. Where did you get that from? He was like, I have my sources. I was like, I don't do anonymous sources. Yeah, you know, so it's like, you got to cite your source. He just kind of kept walking. And the other day I actually was talking to him. I was like, hey, man, how'd you guys get Doug, you know, to join in? He's like, I don't know, but he just did. It's great. He was like, but you know who would be really great if they joined? I'm like, oh, yeah, who? Walked right into this. He's like, you. I'm like, oh, all right. Interview over. Because I was like, how'd you get that? He's like, what'd he say? Oh, he said he saw a tweet. I was like, wait, man, he doesn't follow me. I went and checked. Like, Luke doesn't follow me. Who's out here sending my tweets to Luke Wilson? Like, discreetly. I don't like it. I don't know if it's a because no one on the team follows me either. I don't think. So I'm wondering how that's happening.
You could be doing Techno Thursday in your Han Solo Darth Vader outfit in 2 weeks, and you never know. Times are changing.
It's going to take a lot more than a marathon to get me to show up as Han Solo at practice. Although he is my favorite character so far. I will say that. The way he's like, for who, for what, the whole first movie, just like, look, I need to pay off this debt. You guys can go save the world if you want. I got things to do over here. Like, this Jabba dude is not playing around with me. I like that. About him, but yeah, it'll be a long way before I'm all in on the Techno Thursday thing. But for the record, I am not the only one who's like, oh man, like one day Luke Wilson put on some techno and someone, remember the offensive line? I'm not gonna say the name, but he was like, man, what the heck is this? just super loud. Or I think he was saying, what is going on? Like, there is some guy. Like, I see some guys roll their eyes when he brings out the gigantic boombox, you know, with the techno. Like, it, you know, there's a reason why after he leaves with the boombox, you know, some Atlanta rap comes on from the corner. Like, this is not, it isn't just me, right? Like, it's not. Like, there's plenty of people who are for it. Like, Tyler Lockett goes around and reminds everyone to have on their short shorts. So there are some guys for it, but it's, I'm not alone in this. I'm not the grouch. No. It's just like against fun. But I mean, I'm not gonna lie. If Techno Thursday doesn't happen again, I'm all for it.
So have you suggested any alternatives to Luke, or is it all just Techno or nothing?
No, they can have their day. You know, I mean, if he wants to ask me if he asks me, yes, I would plenty of suggestions. But I mean, a lot of the music that I listen to anyway is played from either the D-line corner or the receiver defensive back corner. I don't know who, or Justin Britt, actually. Justin Britt plays a lot of stuff that I listen to. Justin Britt's an eclectic, for real. Mm-hmm. It throws you off a little bit because, like, you get like some real deal country music coming over there every once in a while. But then out of nowhere, you get some, like, just brand new rap song that I haven't even heard. It's just like, oh, that's Justin Britt playing that? What do you know? He's from the South, I guess. So, yeah, there's that. So I don't have to make too many suggestions. I guess Wednesday and Friday are the days that I hear type of stuff I listen to anyway.
This is a fairly boring question, but in terms of when they designate someone on the practice report for, you know, limited, whatever, what defines limited? Is it like you can only feature a number of snaps that makes you limited, or is it just a... you know, the team decide based on how they feel that it's gone. And, you know, if you do not participate, what do you do? Do you just stand on the sideline and you're not allowed to go into one snap?
So we don't, since I'm new, I don't know if this is always been a thing, but I'm pretty sure it has been. We don't watch the full practice, which is kind of nice sometimes, because, I mean, it would get boring for one, and we'd be standing the whole time out, like, doing that. So we watch, like, the first, like, 5-10 minutes, which is really just stretching and maybe a few position drills. But it looks like the guys who are, like, limited probably don't do any of the team stuff at the end. Mm-hmm. They can probably go through. If they're a D-lineman, they can probably do a few D-line drills. But if it comes to, like, having to go up against the offensive line, they don't. Mm-hmm. That's my guess. Again, we don't get to watch the team stuff.
Okay, so there's no, like, written rule, like, if you do X, you are Y, and if you do Z, you are A.
I don't believe so.
Fair enough.
I don't believe so. Like, I went through the rule book the other day. Not for that. That thing is huge. That's like a million sections. But I don't think so. I think a lot of it has to do with, like, what you can do against contact. Mm-hmm. And how fast you can go, too. Like, mm-hmm. if this drill is, like, clearly... this is a full speed thing. Well, if you have a foot injury like Michael Bennett had, then no, you're probably limited. And Mike didn't really practice anyway. But yeah, like that's how I interpret that.
And just quickly, whilst you're on, Stu and I both listened to your podcast, and you actually had a really good idea that I didn't want to claim as my own last week about, instead of victory formation, just end the game, just shake on it and just walk off. Tell us about your podcast and where we can find it and who you do it with and where we can get it to listen, because it's well worth a listen. It's really good stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, and victory formation is dumb. I can't believe they still do that.
Let's see, you're right. Just end the game.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm just like Michael Bennett in that mindset, right? If I'm still out there and the game's still going, then we can still win. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just how I would look at it, and I'm going to do anything legal that I can to get the ball back. If, you know, or if we're on offense, I'll do anything legal so that we can, you know, go win. So that's why they should just scratch it, because you're only going to get more of what's happening there. Because, you know, guys need to win. All that, you're judged by your wins. It's all that really matters.
Angry, as you say already, so to turn off that anger is not possible, I imagine.
No. Some guys can keep their cool, yeah. But I mean, if you're one of those angry, fiery dudes out there who's trash talking all day and you're like Richard Sherman, you're telling people they suck all day, and, you know, there's a ton of trash talk that goes on in the trenches. My goodness, some of the stuff they I won't say who said told me what they said to people, but man, yeah, it gets bad. Like, mm-hmm. I think Frank Clark, as soon as Dwayne Brown signed, he was like, yeah, I had to go apologize to him. Because they had just gone against Houston, and Frank was rushing from the right, and right at Dwayne, you know. So I mean, yeah. He's like, I have to go apologize to him when he signs. It's like, yeah, because it gets ugly down there. So yeah, they should definitely scrap any play on the field that doesn't have a chance of dictating the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, yeah, no matter what podcast. The play is. Seahawks Man to Man podcast, SeattlePI.com. It's hosted by vSporto, but I always have – it's always on SeattlePI.com. Just go on there and type in Seahawks Man to Man, and that's man to man, like the numeral. And it's always on iTunes under Seahawks Man to Man. And if you just want to find it, the latest episode, it's always pinned to the top of my Twitter, at Mike Dugar, M-I-K-E-D-U-G-A-R. It's always pinned up there. At least I try to make sure that it is. Yeah, and then it's on vsporto.com too, but I don't know the exact link. So yeah, just go to PI. It's a lot faster and more money for the company.
Cool. Yeah. So massive thanks for taking time out of your marathon Star Wars session on your day off as well. Also, obviously, the first time you're on, you obviously quick reported it back to. Your mum that you tweeted, saying that people in England knew you. Is that something you're going to be doing straight after? So, is there any shout outs we can give to your mum?
Well, she texted me about something today. She wants me to do something today. Something I was like, nah, mom, I can't. I'll do it later. She's like, no, do it now. I was like, mom, I'm doing this podcast. These guys overseas. She's like, oh. You know, cool. Where can I listen to it? So, whenever you guys got that link, just send it to me, and I can so I can get it to my mom so she can listen. Yeah, well, she can understand why I didn't go do what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Big shout out to her.
Appreciate you guys for that.
we do appreciate you taking time on your day off. Enjoy the rest of the season. Have a good Christmas, and I'm sure we'll try and catch up during the off season as well.
Oh yeah, love it. Thank you guys for having me. Yeah, I'm gonna try to enjoy however the rest of the season goes. I'm not gonna lie. I selfishly would be upset if I get here and they start missing the playoffs. I'm not gonna lie. I would feel personally attacked by the team if that happened. But other than that, thank you guys. Let me get back to the Star Wars marathon.
Yeah. Enjoy. May the force be with you.
Thanks.
Best clutch field goal kicker. In America this year, in Josh Brown. Meanwhile, here's Gramatica. Romo holds. 19-yard field goal attempt. Oh, it is fumbled by Romo, and then Romo's going to run to the end zone, and he's going to get tackled by Jordan Babineau. Amazing.
Unbelievable.
How crazy is this?
There is nothing automatic in football.
Massive thanks to Michael for jumping on and spending a good part of the hour and obviously interrupting his Star Wars binge, which I believe he's continued for most of his day off as well. I think he watched he watched three films yesterday, was it, Adam?
Yeah, he did well. I have to say, like, as much as we appreciate all of our guests, it is really great when you're able to have someone on who's got the insight of what's going on in the locker room, you know. Even little things like Frank Clark and Thomas Rawls being good mates and the music Justin Britt listens to. I know it's none of it actually matters, but
yeah,
for me, like, just... I love when we're able to add some of the color and texture to the team we support. And so we'll always really appreciate Michael coming on and spending some time with us. It was good fun.
Yeah, definitely. It's just little things where you see the player make a play. It kind of gets a bit of a more warmth and a bit of a boost to it, doesn't it? When you know he's best mates with a bloke who... He has to hit for practice 3-4 times a week. It's just, it's quite cool. It's massively appreciated. So I'm obviously moving on. Week 16, the Seahawks on Christmas Eve go to Jerry World to face the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys who are going to be boosted by the return of, one of a top five running back in the NFL over the past two seasons. Ezekiel Elliott is returning from his 6-game suspension. And for the Seahawks, it's come a week too soon, hasn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, it's the most obvious thing of all time. That the first, whenever this ban was going to come in, if it came in 2022, I can guarantee the first game back will be against the Seahawks. So
yeah.
It's just the most typical thing that's ever happened.
Yeah, it's just this really, really annoying. Obviously, the Dallas Cowboys are they in a similar position as us at 8-6? And I believe that it is mathematical chance that they can make the playoffs, they face a need to win out to have any chance as well. So it could be quite a feisty and quite a pumped up atmosphere in Cowboys Stadium on Sunday. The Seahawks made the trip to Dallas 2 years ago and beat the Cowboys 13-12, or shout-outs game, which was made famous or infamous by the injury to Ricardo Lockett. Before that, they hadn't won on their previous two trips, and the Dallas Cowboys do lead the all-time series 10-7. But this is, I mean, obviously this, but you're saying there's a chance and all that. It doesn't exactly feel like there is heading into Sunday, for Sunday, and obviously the wider picture of playoffs, Adam.
No, I mean, I hate to be the negative guy. I think the year's done in terms of playoff aspirations. And I'll take you back to the Super Bowl 48 win, which is obviously always a nice memory. I always remember watching the mic'd up stuff and thinking that, I'm not sure, but Richard Sherman spent a lot of the time in that game just screaming at his own teammates on the sideline.
Yeah.
And I always thought, like,
he's a bad man.
I mean, all that stuff. And, like, he right between the numbers, stuff like that. And I always thought that this must be so great when they're winning. If they start losing, though, this stuff could get a little bit tired. And I just wonder if it's the kind of thing that could make people fall out with each other. And, you know, a drop of intensity could start causing problems. And I'm a little bit worried that this team, knowing they can't make the playoffs, deep down, whatever they want to say about, you know, championship week, that this could be a game where they start to check out and but not check out like they don't care, but just get very petty and very chippy and take another pretty heavy defeat. So I'm a little bit worried with what we're going to see on Sunday, more from a conduct of the players than anything else.
Yeah, the end of Jacksonville game is far too fresh in the memories, isn't it? With all that, it's just, I would not be surprised. And the Cowboys have the characters and the players, especially with Zeke being extra fired up after his enforced break. Yeah, it could be slightly chippy on Sunday. But what do the Seahawks have to do to win? Is it all about stopping Zeke, or is it improving all over across the board on Sunday?
I mean, it's across the board. I mean, they have to get the offense going. You know, it's irrelevant what the defense do if they can't score any points. Sean Lee is a crucial figure for Dallas defense, and he's playing, I assume. He's a bit of a injury stunted season, but I'm pretty sure he'll be there. Mm. For me, the defense have done their bit this year. I'm cool with what they've done. They've given us as much as they can do. Sunday was an aberration, but they had literally the worst defense the Russell Wilson era has seen by a long shot. The offense needs to show some pride in this game and put some points on the board, because they're getting, they are still getting paid. And there's quite a few of those guys that are on big money, taking up big cap hits. And, it's time that those guys stood up. And, if we win 35-34, I'm not going to say a word about the defense being bad. That's all I care about, just that the offense get going.
Yeah. And obviously the O-line slightly improves with Luke Jokel. It's probably going to be seeing Aaron Donald's shadow for quite a few nights and months to come. On the defensive side, though, Zeke is going to be the main focus. But if it appears that Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright are going to be full go, that is as big a plus as this Seahawks defense can get at this point, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, as much as we play with a 4-3, it's almost like a 3-4 in the sense that we play with the two guys that almost act like interior linebackers, don't they?
Yeah.
The way they play and stopping the run and, that side-to-side speed. It's probably worth briefly commenting at this stage on the Earl Thomas-Bobby Wagner spat. And it's not looking particularly pretty. But what I will say is that I empathise with what Earl was trying to say on Sunday. He probably didn't say it in the right way, but Bobby Wagner was a net negative on the team.
He was.
And even if he was organising things, his lack of sideline speed, there's definitely someone that could have been quicker to get from side to side. And maybe would have given up some of the plays, but just, Wagner was giving up every play.
Yeah, just free out, because he clearly wasn't, I mean, he's obviously going to say differently. I think he has said differently. He wasn't going to go at it full pout, because if he did go at it full pout, his hamstring's going to pop and he's out for the rest of the season no matter what. But if he didn't play, you kind of trust the other guys to step up, to step in and just fill the gaps, fill the fits they have to on the defensive side, and Wagner wasn't doing that. So, what Earl Thomas said is probably true and probably a fair assessment, is to say it in public and then to completely dismiss what your coach and Bobby Wagner say to kind of end the issue a few hours ago is far from helpful, and kind of as Mike said to us, is kind of could be the first smoke signs of the Thomas years coming to an end. That could be one of the big changes the Seahawks team could see in the 2018 offseason, Adam.
I mean, he definitely wants big money. You know, he's on big money now, but he wants big with four extra eyes between the B and the G. Yeah. And he is the kind of guy that you could get a raft of picks for from a team, you know, whether or not he would go somewhere like Cleveland or somewhere like that, I doubt. But, you know, I imagine he's got some sort of clause in his contract that protects him against various trades. Maybe he doesn't, but the way he has talked in the last year, he hasn't spoken like some of them have about, you know, being lifetime Seahawkers like Doug Baldwin has. He's mentioned a few times on the radio in November, you know, if I'm in Seattle or if I'm in somewhere else, those were his exact words.
Yeah.
That and he doesn't seem happy, does he?
No. And also the thing with Thomas is that he had an injury, and we all know how he reacted to that injury. And it more than likely was something that completely changed his outlook on the business side of it. He wants to make the money while he still can, while he still wants to play. If he has that want to play, he wants to be compensated and rewarded to the most and to the highest bidder, basically, at this stage of his career. And that, with all the issues and cap issues and re-signings the team are going to have to make, he probably isn't at the top of that list for this summer.
No, and we've all...
If he's going to continue throwing his... just obviously going off brand messages he has today with compared to what Bobby Wagner said, then it's not going to help his case, and it's not going to be a tough bow to cut the strings of, is it?
No, and we have... the Seahawks have received the best of Earl Thomas.
Yeah.
He might stay at the level for a few years, but he's not going to get better than what the Seahawks have had. And, you know, he's proven to be, you know, one of the more successful draft picks the franchise has probably ever had.
Yeah.
And so he has been worth every penny, every pick, you know, whatever. So if he was to be gotten rid of, you know, you almost couldn't begrudge it. If he's not going to get $15 million a year from us, he probably deserves to get that at some point in his career, given the body of work he's put in. And so he's a guy that I would struggle to begrudge the money to, I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, he's not 30 for another, well, 18 months, I think. I don't think he's 30.
Really?
I'm pretty certain he's 28, Earl Thomas. And the one who's always compared with Earl Thomas is Ed Reed. And Ed Reed was a top-level, top-tier player at his position, and then all of a sudden just kind of stopped when he turned to 30, 31, 32. So, Earl Thomas has got another 18 months on his contract. If you're willing to wait 18 months to then let him go for just one pick, and as you say, Adam, he could get a hell of a lot more, two, three picks and more players involved. And you just kind of, if there's going to be changes on the Seahawks coaching, either philosophy or people doing the coaching this year, I would be amazed if that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. If it is a change of philosophy, which probably suggests a change at the top, Earl Thomas isn't as a key cog as that. I mean, I think the people on Twitter have always said that Earl Thomas is Pete Carroll on the field kind of thing. He is the perfect Pete Carroll player because he's the root of everything that the defense is able to do, which is covering that deep part of the field. But if that philosophy changes in any way, it may do, then Earl Thomas's impact for that just slightly dwindle, and obviously the cost will not change in spite of that, will it, if that makes sense?
No, it's not one that I see ending that prettily and that sort of harmoniously. I can see there being a little bit of bad blood, probably from Earl's side, but
yeah,
I don't know. He's just not a guy I could ever really hold a grudge against.
No, not even. He's been the way he plays, the intensity just comes out of the screen when you hear him talk and stuff. But I mean, this isn't reaction. Go and listen to how he spoke for the last year since that injury. Go and see how he's answered questions about his long-term future, as Adam says, compared to other players like Wilson, Sherman,
Baldwin,
even Cam Chancellor to a certain degree. Even with all the stuff he had a couple of years ago, he used the we word a lot more in reference to the Seahawks than Earl Thomas has over the past, what, 10, 12 months, Adam?
Mm. Yeah, for sure.
How much did all the injuries catch up to the day of the team that went after that?
To be totally honest, I think the guys that play, you know, you got to give your heads up to, you know, Wags and, you know, a couple of guys that play. But, you know, my personal opinion, I think all three they should have played. You know, the backups, what it did, you know, just as good. But, you know, the injuries, you know, Cam, Sherm, KJ, it definitely hurt today.
How limited do you think Bobby was, just from your observation?
I have no clue. But, you know, you normally see Wags, you know, running from sideline to sideline. And he just couldn't do it today. But I think he just waited a little bit too long to take himself out.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the things to watch for this offseason. But back on the game quickly, because we still have two of them to go through. There's not much I say. The Seahawks season could easily be at an end by the time the team, well, playoff aspirations could be at an end by the time the team kick off on Sunday night under that ginormous scoreboard. Score prediction, Adam?
I think we might get a little bit of a beating. I think it might be sort of 30-17 to Dallas.
Yeah, I do think we'll lose. I think I've got 27-20 to the Cowboys. I just don't. Zeke Elliott is just the worst, especially after Sunday. It's just the worst timing for anything like that to happen. But yeah, hopefully the Seahawks can stay alive, as even as unlikely as it may seem at this point. And then obviously they return home on, is it New Year's Eve or New Year's Day?
New Year's Eve
against the Arizona Cardinals, who also are a team which was supposed to be a top team in the NFC West this year, and are almost more certainly in the Seahawks entering a rebuild phase with that franchise and questions over the coaching future present in Arizona as it stands. Do you want to do a quick lock or shock for week 16, Adam?
Let's do it. I will go, as he pulls up the schedule with lift music playing in the background. I will go. Well, that's not very helpful, is it? I will go the Vikings to win at Green Bay.
Okay.
I've only even looked at one game. In fact, you could have the Ravens at the I'll go the Ravens to beat the Colts home just to be absolutely certain, because it is a lock after all.
I will go with the after what we saw on Sunday, I think, and after what they've done for last week, I think the Rams to beat the Titans is an absolute certainty.
Yeah, for sure.
Because if that coaching stuff isn't changed in Tennessee, then it's just, why did they take Mariota to do what Mariota can do? Shock of the week, Adam?
This is quite a tricky one, because all of them seem pretty straightforward for me to predict. I don't really think I've got one for you, to be honest.
I think I might be in a Jimmy G haze. I think the 49ers might beat the Jags. I think Shanahan is at that top tier offensive mind. Mm-hmm. I think the team is buzzing at the minute. If you see how they reacted to it on Sunday, the come from behind win, I think it was as well. Jimmy Garoppolo is the first quarterback to win first five starts or first three starts for the new team. Yeah, that team is rolling. The season is ending at the worst possible time for the 49ers. And I just think that Shanahan is good enough offensively to unlock that defense, and obviously Fournette may or may not play as well, which obviously hasn't had much of impact on them last week. But yeah, I think that'd be my shock of the week, which would be quite
fair
impressive.
I honestly can't give you one, because I'm looking at Ravens comfortable, Vikings comfortable, Lions, Chiefs, Patriots, Bears, Panthers. I mean, the Saints and Falcons, neither of that would be a shock, because I think the Saints will win that. And then Redskins, Rams, Chargers, I'll go Jaguars, Cowboys, Cardinals, Steelers, Eagles. I see those are all fairly comfortable wins. Bad to have games on Christmas Day, isn't it? Doug Baldwin made an interesting point about, you know, the human side of having to be out of the city on Christmas Eve, you know, away from your families, and do you feel a bit bad for these guys having to play on Christmas Day?
Yeah, it's very, especially when there's no college games for them to compete against on a Saturday.
Yeah.
It's also not an ideal slate of games, other than where you've got to make up an 8 or 7 game deficit in the Pick'em League.
I think it's 11 I'm behind, so not going to be having that, unfortunately.
Yeah, any get-in-the-bin, proverbial bin candidates for you this week?
Well, I've just had a skip delivered for the entire Seahawks offense, because I'm going to need something bigger than a bin.
Yeah.
But the NFL league office and rule makers can well and truly get themselves right in the bin, because, yes, by the rule, you made the right call on the Jesse James catch, non-catch. But if that is the rule is complete and utter bollocks.
Yeah.
And it has to be changed, because that is the kind of, that one play alone has stopped the Patriots from having to go to Jacksonville and then go to Pittsburgh in the playoffs. And now they probably just get like some hyenas coming to them, and then the Steelers typically choking at away at Foxborough. As they just march onto yet another Super Bowl win, and you just feel that it's just ridiculous, and it's just annoying to see them get the row of the green. As Damashek says, that they, as a turn of the millennium, the world decided that they would be anointed as the chosen team, and that everything they needed to go for them would, and it's just bloody annoying.
Yeah, I can't think of any other people to put in. I'm talking on the catch. Doug Baldwin said earlier today, when asked if he knows what a catch is, he says, "I do." Oh, you mean as it pertains to NFL rules? I don't. so yeah, that pretty much sums it all up. One more stat which has just come across my Twitter timeline. The fewest yards per carry on first down in the NFL in 2017 season. The Seahawks, remarkably, are not last. They're the fourth worst team at 3.39 yards on first down. That kind of goes along with all the stay on schedule stuff, doesn't it? Where the team have struggled consistently to do that on first down. Especially when you've had Eddie Lacy active for 80% of the season.
Very, yeah, unsurprising stats, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. So obviously we will be... anything else you want to cover, Adam? I think that's everything.
I think that's about it. I think what with Michael's long interview, and we've rambled on plenty long enough, that we will give our listeners a brief bit of respite and wish them well over the holidays.
Yeah, and also just quick note, all our thoughts are with people in the Washington area who were affected by the Amtrak derailment earlier in the week. The pictures and stories from it sound absolutely horrific, and obviously I haven't been to that area, but it's a key spot in the area of just getting around the city, around the state, and it's an awful, awful thing to happen. So all our thoughts from this side of the pond are with people who may have been affected in any which way from that, Adam.
Yeah, 100%, and hopefully all of your friends and families that are listening or whatever are all safe, and we'll be with you over the weekend.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, as Adam said, this is all we have before this side of Christmas, so have a very Merry Christmas or Hanukkah, Adam.
Thank you very much. Just passed. You missed that by a day.
I know, I did.
the sentiment thoroughly appreciated.
Yeah, and then obviously we'll be back next year for the final podcast of the 2017 season and 2017. I think we've got another guest joining us. But if you want to get involved, you can on Twitter at SeahawkersUK. Personal Twitters are at Stu_Court, at Adam D. Nathan, and at Ross Bell 1984. The website is ukseahawkers.com. The Facebook page, which has been a hoot this last few days, is the UK Seattle Seahawks fans, and the Pedestrian Podcast.podbean.com. It's also on Instagram at the Pedestrian Podcast, and on iTunes, the Pedestrian Podcast as well. If you're yet to rate this podcast, please do, as I think we're about 60 episodes in now. So if you haven't by now, you're probably not going to and probably not able to. But yeah, thank you very much for listening. Until the next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Don't be shit, Hawks.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks Super Bowl 48 champions.